What's up, everyone? The Pro Football Weekly podcast is back, and we are so glad that you are back with us. He is Eric Edholm. I am Arthur Arkish, and it's our pleasure to help you set the table for Week 13 in the NFL. Eric, how is your day going thus far?
It's going well, and I'm not just glad, Arthur. I am thrilled that our folks are listening to us right now.
Can't you guys tell?
Thrilled.
You should see the look on his face.
It's thrilled.
There's no mistaking it. It should be a fun weekend in the NFL. It's obviously getting down to the nitty-gritty time, and there are a few good matchups to discuss, and we'll get to those in a minute. Let's take care of some administrative stuff at the top. Please head to iTunes and subscribe to the Pro Football Weekly podcast. Leave us a rating and a review while you are there, and make sure you check out our great sponsor, Loot Crate. They're at lootcrate.com, and they are the best surprise you know is coming, so we appreciate them. Also, a big thank you to Dan Mott, our producer, helping make us come to you as clearly as possible. So, Eric, before we do what we do each week and get to some of the big games in the NFL, the big story in the NFL still, I know it's a few days removed, but you wrote on it on Tuesday, and people are certainly still reacting to Eli Manning getting benched, to Eli Manning's Iron Man streak ending at 210 regular season games, the second longest in NFL history, and it's ending for Geno Smith.
That's certainly one way you have to view it, and the whole thing is just so anticlimactic, so unceremonious, so just it leaves a bad taste in everybody's mouth. I mean, I don't think anyone's even – I mean, obviously Geno gets an opportunity, but it's not like he's walking into a situation where – okay, this is his chance to claim the starting job and everyone's behind him here and everything. Look, I think a lot of people realized Eli may have been in his final run, whether it was the end of this season, the final you know, five games, or whether Eli could be brought back next year as a shepherd, the way Kurt Warner helped shepherd him into the NFL, et cetera. I just don't think anyone thought it would happen like this.
Right.
It just dropped on us. Everyone was caught off guard. And now the Giants are left to clean this mess up. They made one of their biggest moves first, and it's not going to be shocking when Ben McAdoo is fired. It's not going to be stunning if GM Jerry Reese is let go. Other star players, maybe like Jason Pierre-Paul or whoever, big salaries. But to do it like this, now they gave him the option to start, sure, I guess that's some sort of measure of respect. But other than that, there's nothing good to say about it, and it's tough for Eli. You know, his numbers are not terrible, okay?
Right.
And that's something. Was he playing great the last few weeks? No, but just the whole thing is just wild.
Respect for Eli, despite the disrespect he received from his team, because a pro's pro in any, you know, starting quarterback worth his weight, if they're told you're going to start to keep a streak alive, but it's really just going to be kind of you know, a mirage, and we're going to bench you for Geno Smith, Eli said, no, I'm not going out like that. So I give him a lot of credit for that, and just saying, you know, I'm not as worried about the streak. If this is what you guys are doing, it's what you're doing. The Giants can save $16 million by moving on from Eli early on in the league year next year. That's what I would expect to happen. Although, Eric, if they were going to kind of do him like this, should we be so sure that they're not going to try and maximize their trade leverage first rather than give Eli the choice between 32 teams if they determine he's still an asset that they can get something for? I mean, gosh, I don't know if that's not the way this goes down.
Yeah, you know, everyone just assumes, okay, this is the end of the Eli Manning era. Of course, we knew that. He may never play another game for him. But then you start thinking, right, do they release him and give him that – hey, we screwed you up here by doing it the way we did. We can at least do you a solid by letting you go. But look, if they think they can get something for him,
right,
they passed up, you would think, opportunities for maybe a team like the Jaguars at the trade deadline. We don't know if there was a formal offer. No one has specifically said that.
Not connecting, yeah.
Yeah, right. And Tom Coughlin and all that, the respect they have for each other. You think maybe they just say, all right, we're going to cut him. But they could get something in return if there's multiple teams interested.
Right.
That's what they'll try to field out. Now, who's making that move? Is it John Mara after he fires his GM? Is it somebody new? Do they bring Dave Gettleman back? I don't know. I mean, there's just so many unknowns at this point, and you have to think Mara is going to have some sort of say on how it's handled.
What I feel comfortable in saying that I do know is that Eli Manning is still a starting quarterback in the league. If you survey the landscape and you kind of look at some of the dudes who are out there starting and barely starting, I think Manning's still got some good football left in him. I think it needs to be the right environment, which obviously wasn't a team that didn't have an offensive line or a run game.
Mm-hmm.
We've been screaming from the mountaintop about that since February in the Giants' decision, I guess technically since the spring. and they're ignoring the offensive line and not doing anything at running back except for Wayne Gallman in the fourth round or something like that. So it's going to be about the fit. It always is in the NFL. But Eli, what, 36, 37?
37, yep.
Yeah, I don't know. I think he's got some good football left in him in the right environment. It's so easy to forget he loses Odell and Sterling Shepard, and nothing's going right for that team.
Sure.
And he shouldered a lot of the blame. I mean, I even think back to the combine in February and Ben McAdoo saying, just trying to deflect the horrible offensive line and saying, well, Eli needs to be more assertive in the pocket and be ready to go
good
on
memory.
That back
good
foot
point.
And drill
yep.
it. So I don't know. It's just it's a weird thing. And I'll let you kind of put a bow on this. But we just mentioned on the TV show, Eli went to bat for Ben McAdoo to help him get the job. So that's kind of one more part of this that kind of leaves a sort of a sour taste in your mouth.
And I had forgotten what you just said about McAdoo in the spring and right. And it was almost like they did everything they could to take the blame off the offensive line. They made no real upgrades there.
Yep.
You know, other than adding Chad Wheeler, the undrafted free agent, or whoever.
Right. And DJ Fluker.
DJ
Fluker. Took a stab on a former first rounder, but yep. it's not an earnest move to really improve, you know?
They didn't invest.
Right.
You know, they bought penny stock. And so, yeah, that was the, you know, and I just thought people told me I was making too big a deal of it in week two when McAdoo said that that's on the quarterback when they had a false start on the 2 yard line against Detroit in week
oh,
two.
Yeah.
And, yep. you know, a series of timing mistakes in the first half, an ugly first half that started this whole thing downward. So I just felt like, boy, you know, you're showing up a legend there. And just that was the start of it. But I had forgot about what you said prior to that. Back to your original point, is he a starting quarterback? Yeah, I think he turns 38 in like January 4th or something. I have to look at that. But look, there are older quarterbacks in the league starting and playing at a high level. That's got to be said. I thought his numbers were fine. If he played at that level with better receivers than what the Giants have trotted out there amid injury,
mm-hmm.
sure, he's good. And think about, you know, Ryan Tannehill got hurt in August. You know, there's always free agent movement in the offseason. There are young quarterbacks who get drafted but aren't ready to start right away. Heck, Jameis Winston could be the next Ezekiel Elliott and be suspended for 6 games or more.
Yep.
You know, Eli Manning could step into a starting job there, or the Jenga pieces get moved around, or not Jenga. What's the word? The game there you play where the blocks slide in and out there. Not Jenga.
Jenga. Yeah, no, that's Jenga.
No. Where
they stack vertically. And
yeah. I can't believe I'm not a Tetris.
Okay.
Tetris
yep.
is what I was thinking. The magic of podcasts. But yeah, no, I just feel like there's enough moving parts. Or can you imagine the Jets just being like,
oh man,
we're going to take Eli.
We
may
rope.
Not get your draft pick yeah. that you get, Sam Darnold, whoever, but we're going to draft Josh Rosen. We're going to get Eli. Man, that would just be a fantastic story. But.
And that's a part of this too. We don't want to spend the whole podcast on Eli
right.
and the Giants, but the Giants likely aware of where they're sitting draft-wise right now. Have done a lot of vetting, we know, of the top prospects in Darnold and Rosen and maybe a few other guys. And if they determine, I know you wrote this in your column too, Eric, if they determine those guys are only going to be available in the top five, I don't really believe in teams tanking in September. I agree with Greg Gabriel on that. He said it on this
yeah.
podcast. But when you start to see the writing on the wall in December, there's only a few weeks left, maybe you will start to alter things to set yourself up you know, as well as you can, we'll put it.
Yeah, it's getting dangerous. They beat the Chiefs the other week. You know, I mean,
right.
all of a sudden you can kind of luck your way into a couple wins and really hurt your draft status. And the Jets are, look, they're a rival. I don't care how they look at it. You know, the Giants may think they're above the Jets in every way. But, yeah, I mean, they're only 2 wins behind them, and they've played terrible football lately. So, yeah, I mean, if, you know, they luck their way into a win against Oakland or the Arizona Cardinals or the Washington Redskins down the stretch or something like that, all of a sudden they're picking 9th or 11th and may not be in range. So, yeah, I do think that draft positioning had something to do with it, and that knowing they were taking a step down, and maybe that's why they're going to Geno Smith and not Davis Webb. You know what I mean? Like, well, let's give Geno the shot. We'll say, okay, we found out he's not the guy. Davis Webb still has 2-3 years to develop.
Sure.
We're not worried about that. We'll go to Geno. We'll give him a shot. When he fails, we don't re-sign him. And, oh, by the way, now we're picking 4th, 5th in the draft. We're in great shape.
That's a good point, because while they are kind of, if you will, doing Geno a solid, giving him an audition for either the Giants or another team, he's also going to be in part remembered as the guy who came in after this unceremonious benching of Eli.
Crazy?
That's a pretty tough spot to enter in. So a lot of layers to this one. It'll be interesting to see what happens down the stretch. But Ben McAdoo and Jerry Reese, you have to think, are in big trouble. And as Eric said, there are going to be a lot more moves. This was just the first and probably the most surprising. So Pro Football Weekly podcast. Thanks for being with us. He's Eric. I'm Arthur. We're going to just spin around the NFL, and there's a couple really good games, Eric. I'm just going to start right at the I'm using NFL GSIS. I know the Vikings are riding, what is a seven-game winning streak now.
Seven.
Into Atlanta, where the Falcons, I believe, have now won three in a row and are clinging to that last wild card spot. The Vikings probably have to have their sights on maybe catching the Eagles. I mean, they're within a game, and they're surging right now. So this should be a fun matchup. What jumps out at you just sort of on the surface in this
one? Yeah, really good football game. And you know, the Falcons kind of learned their lessons up in New England, and they had the setback at Carolina. Yeah, at Carolina. I had to think about that a minute.
Yep.
But otherwise, have played much better, and we're fine without Devontae Freeman. I believe he's back this week, or has been cleared at least. So it's all things going forward on that. Julio had his breakout game. You know, I actually like the way the defense has played largely, a couple of mistakes here and there or whatever. You know, they let Russell Wilson kind of scramble around on him. But, yeah, so I'll take it from the Falcons' perspective in that, you know, it may actually be a little bigger for them, even though the Vikings obviously have eyes on getting a first-round bye and continuing this torrid streak. So, you know, the Atlanta Falcons have a couple of tough ones here at home. Looking at their schedule, they've got the Vikings and the Saints, and then they've got three straight division games in a row to finish out, two on the road at Tampa, at New Orleans, before finishing with Carolina. So, you know, I mean, this is the Falcons, you know, iron sharpens iron. I like the way they've handled a lot of adversity, gotten through some things, figured some things out. Oh, by the way, this defense, I mean, like, you know, you've pointed out, I know they gave up some points in a couple games, Steelers and Redskins, but the Vikings just take you out of your game. I mean, the coverage outside, the deep safety play, the waves of pass rush up front, the tackling, I mean, that's an underrated aspect of it. They're good. You know this Vikings team, and you know how well they play defensively.
I don't see a lot of weaknesses. You know, everyone is going to run to discuss the Eagles and the Saints for front office executives of the year for the jobs they did in the offseason. You better include Rick Spielman, too, the way he rebuilt the offensive line.
Handled the quarterback
stuff,
too.
I mean, Case Keenum, I don't think it's really debatable at this point. He's the best bargain of 2017 free agency. He has to be, right? I mean, he's put a Pro Bowl campaign for a one-year, $2 million deal.
He'd have to
I don't know if he's going to a Pro Bowl, but those types of numbers of late.
He's on the way. Yeah.
Just a spectacular job the Vikings are doing there, and Mike Zimmer. And this is an interesting spot. Stephon Diggs, they're still trying to get him going a little bit. I believe the Falcons are going to be without Desmond Trufant just as they get Devonta Freeman back from a concussion. I think Trufant is in protocol and is going to be hard-pressed to play. So that'll be something to keep an eye on, too. And you're right, Atlanta's defense has been playing better, but I worry a little bit. I still don't see that steady pass rush late in games that can help an offense that seems to have figured it out. And they're not really turning the ball over at all, either. So you're going to want to see a little bit more playmaking from that defense, I think, to complement that offense that seems to be getting going. And, of course, you said it's a bigger game for Atlanta. I couldn't agree more, because Minnesota's not giving up this division lead at this point.
Right.
And the Falcons still have a shot. Like you said, it's all in front of them in the division. Minnesota does come right back, though, for another NFC South road trip in Carolina next week. So this is a tough two-week stretch for them for a team as hot as they are.
Quick question on the Vikings. Has Pat Shurmur flown too far under the radar for the work he's
Absolutely.
Done with that offense? Could, you know, and Hob, your dad wrote a story about candidates for the Bears head coaching job that I read this week that I enjoyed, and it's something to keep an eye out for. You know, and he listed his name, and I think rightfully so, and it's one of those things like, you know, he got so buried for that Cleveland experience. Can we maybe put Cleveland head coaching experience as a look, it's not a strike against you if you lose games there. I mean, look what Hugh Jackson's done. Look what, you know, every other guy who's been there the last 15 years has done there. I almost feel like, and he's, you know, I mean, his personality, he's not always the most excitable guy, but he is a dude in game planning.
Yep.
He knows how to score.
If nothing else, man, there needs to be an asterisk for all the former Browns coaches. I mean, no one succeeds there, as you just said. So,
yeah.
Yes, I think you need to take it with a grain of salt. And as far as Pat Shurmur goes, he has made it work with different quarterbacks at this point. I mean, Bradford had his best year last year when no one saw it coming. He comes in 2 weeks before the season. Case Keenum, obviously no one saw coming whatsoever. And look at what he's doing. The way they've kind of, you know.
Adam Thielen's a number one.
right. Adam Thielen has turned into a star. Yeah, they're scoring lots of points. And those were what they went into the season. Those were the missions they had. We're going to be a more explosive team. And despite losing their explosive running back and their former first overall pick at quarterback, they have not skipped a beat. And, yes, I think Pat Shurmur is going to get some attention, at least some interviews, and rightfully so.
They're top 10 in every offensive category, I'm just looking, except for rushing yards per play. They're sixth in rushing yards per game. But rushing yards per play and passing yards per game, they're 12th. Every other category, they're like top eight. With all they lost, Dalvin Cook and everything, that's just phenomenal.
Impressive. And you know what? Let's give Mike Zimmer a little credit. I know we're a big fan of his work, and he was the one who made that bold move to let Norv Turner go last year. They called it a resignation. I don't know that that's exactly what happened. But
forced resignation.
Yeah, the in-season move to Shurmur. He had the wherewithal to put another, or he kind of had the wisdom is probably a better word, to get Tony Sparano on that staff. So there's so much experience on that offensive staff, and I love it when I see young coaches do that. Zimmer's not young anymore, but guys who build guys who build some experienced guys around them, and he's certainly done that. So that will be a fun one to watch. Let's move on here. I want to stick in the NFC South, Eric, and talk about another huge one with Carolina heading into New Orleans, and the Saints, of course, coming off the big loss out west, and in Carolina, kind of survival act versus the Jets, and it's the Cam Newton roller coaster. I thought he was getting ready to go on potentially another MVP type run, and he was just awful after the bye in New York, where they needed a Luke Kuechly pick late to survive.
Yeah, you're right, and yeah, it's you have to ride the wave with Cam, obviously, and that's the kind of thing that you know he's been outside of his MVP season, and he just, you know, two steps forward, one back, one step forward, two back, whatever it may be. But he still, you know, gives them a chance to win in this game. He was not good at all in that Week 3 matchup against the Saints.
It was three interceptions, I believe.
Shockingly bad.
In Carolina. Was that the game Olsen got hurt, I think?
Who
was it the week before?
Greg, was it Olsen maybe got hurt the week before? Right, okay, that's fine. You're not expecting a banner performance. This is the Saints defense. It was terrible the first 2 weeks of the season.
Right.
They made a switch at cornerback. Panthers were just ineffective until, I think, very late in the game. They moved the ball a little bit. But, yeah, so obviously things have changed so much since that first meeting. But, you know, I think the Saints still have to feel pretty good about themselves, even with last week's disappointment, the loss of the Rams. And look, Breeze didn't play well either. I watched that game as closely as I could, battling the flu, but he missed some opportunities. He had a couple of dropped interceptions. He had some balls out there. Sean Payton didn't coach a great game other than a clever timeout and a clever or challenge there, I think, at one point, but he made some mistakes as well. So not vintage Saints, at least we've come to know, but I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see this one. I still give the Saints a little bit of an edge in this one.
I had forgotten that it was that Week 3 win in Carolina that kind of proved to be a springboard for the Saints defense.
Oh, yeah.
You just said they were so awful the first 2 weeks. The interceptions started coming, and they played really well in that game. Now, Eric, let me ask you, and I don't think we should say were they exposed, because when you take away maybe a team's best defender or best secondary player, that's what's going to happen. But how badly did the Saints need Marshawn Lattimore back? Because it was pretty clear what Sean McVay wanted to do, how he wanted to attack that Lattimore and Ken Crawley list defense last week.
Yeah, he and Crawley being out and just limiting what the Saints could do, and I think they just sort of felt like they could only play certain coverages. They had to be a little bit safe. And so, yeah, it really did kind of limit what they were able to do defensively. And I think Goff had 350 and you know, Gurley ran well. And everything was really clicking. They slowed down a little bit. But, yeah, it just – they're clearly a different defense. We've extolled the virtues of Lattimore, I think, fairly on this podcast over the year. I think people are just getting to know him a little bit, should really watch just how special he is. And, you know, I think we're going to be talking about him and that Jalen Ramsey group of, you know, the best cover guys in football the next 5 years, the way we did about Peterson and Sherman 5 years ago. So, yeah, I mean, it's a key part of what they do, and losing Alex Okafor, the pass rush. So they've got a few things that they – their depth will be tested. Their starting group, very good, even without Okafor. Not Lattimore. Now I'm worried. Yep.
They're both at 8-3 now, Carolina and New Orleans. Are the Saints still the team to beat in the division? Hub, in our power rankings this week, gave the Panthers the slight nod over the Saints because New Orleans also struggled at home versus Washington before needing Drew Brees to, you know, pull a Drew Brees late 2 weeks ago. do you have a strong feeling on one of these teams versus the other? Are the Falcons the team that are poised to potentially overtake them both? Because this is the best division in football, right?
Yeah, that is. Oh, yeah, the top three. And, you know, and even the Bucs aren't an awful football team, obviously.
It's dangerous. That can be a tough
sure.
out, right?
Yeah, I mean, they've at least been plucky at times or whatever. And, you know, with Winston, they're, you know, a little bit more dangerous in the passing game or whatever. But, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, if Alvin Kamara can do what he's done and have a big game, I still feel like I lean towards the Saints. But, you know, it's making me question a little bit, too. And Christian McCaffrey's come on a little bit here. And you see, you know, the Panthers have been kind of, I don't want to say underrated, but, you know, they're good defensively. You know, they yeah. do what they need to do. And they keep scores low and they take away your run game. And, you know, they're not a huge sack team and a huge interception. TI sacks are pretty good, but the interceptions are a little bit low. So it's more about just being smart positionally, and that those are the kind of teams over the years that have given Breeze a little bit of trouble.
Yeah, no doubt. We only have a couple minutes left on the PFW podcast. We did dedicate the front portion to Eli, and I think that was certainly, you know, needed to be done. It's such a huge story. But there's a couple more games I want to hit on quickly, Eric. Mm-hmm. Let's go out west. You'll be in the Pacific Northwest Sunday for the Eagles-Seahawks, and certainly that's interesting. It almost feels like the Eagles are kind of taking over maybe for the Seahawks is the conference's, you know, dominant team of late. Certainly, I don't think that can really be debated. We mentioned the Vikings as well, obviously, but just your thoughts on the way that the Eagles are just totally blowing out opponents and whether they'll continue to do that against a Seattle defense that, of course, is quite wounded.
Yeah, right. I mean, you know, you have 2-8-3 teams playing elsewhere. You have a couple other games involving NFC teams that have, you know, a 9-2 Vikings and 7-4 Falcons. So the Eagles are in great shape for that number one overall seed. If they yep. just sort of get to the finish line, they could have the division wrapped up by the time this game is kicked off. So to me, it's more about how do the Seahawks try to slow that down without the Legion of Boom, without, you know, some pass rush source. They had to let Dwight Freeney go. You know, they've had other guys get hurt and stuff, so they're really shorthanded up front. Do they just hope Russell Wilson pulls them out of it? That's what it's become. It's Russell Wilson to me is a top three or four MVP candidate this year for what he's done, because they've required him to be near perfect almost every week. And so, you know, it feels like the Seahawks are hanging on for dear life at this point.
Wilson's been awesome. Is it fair to say he hasn't quite seen a defense like this, at least not in a while? I still continue to think that we don't really talk about what Jim Schwartz is doing with that Eagles defense maybe as much as we should, just because Carson Wentz is the, you know, MVP front runner, and everything's been so exciting on the offensive side of the ball.
They've got like six pass rushers. I mean, you know, they've got, yep. you know, they've got guys up front who can do it. They can blitz if they want to. They're getting healthy in the secondary. You know, the injury at linebacker with Hicks didn't really hurt them. So, you know, Nigel Bradham, guys like that have played really well. It's a really good defense, and, you know, the special teams have been successful too.
You think Frank Reich and John DeFilippo could both be head coaches next year? Is it going to be one or the other? Would they be a package deal? How do you see that potentially shaking out?
I don't think package deal. I don't know. My gut feeling, and this is just I talked to somebody the other day, and it's been a couple weeks now that I think about it, but I mentioned Reich first because I know John somewhat well personally, but I was wondering about Frank Reich, and I thought, you know, I could see him having some respect, but the person I talked to who had worked with both of them before said that, you know, DeFilippo's got that engaging personality. Mm-hmm. He's got that quarterback guru title to his name. You know, he's been a coordinator before in Cleveland. So there's been, you know, I don't think he's got to go the coordinator route before. I have a feeling DeFilippo, Matt LaFleur, these guys could go that Sean McVay route this year. I would say 55-45 or 60-40, DeFilippo would have the edge in getting a job. I don't think they both do, though.
Was McVay calling plays under Gruden? He wasn't, right? It was Gruden's deal.
Gruden, you know, gave up that duty
last
at one
year.
Point.
Okay.
Yeah, he was heavily involved in the game planning. But, on game day, he'd eventually let him call some plays.
And the reason I ask, of course, is because that, you know, is a potential concern. Doug Peterson obviously learned under one of the best, but that was Andy Reid's show.
Yeah.
And Peterson obviously has done quite well for himself
yep.
in that elevated role now. And, you know, I think it will at least be in the back of people's minds with Reich and DeFilippo. So
yeah.
One more game I just want to get to quickly. I should have saved the one we just discussed for last. But, Eric, just Detroit, Baltimore, either of these teams built to potentially make some noise? I mean, the Ravens cling into the sixth, to the final wildcard spot in the AFC right now, I believe.
Right ahead of the Bills, I think. Yep.
Yes,
yep.
And the Lions on the outside looking in right now, but not far off at 6-5. I don't know. It's an interesting game, at least. Either of these teams, would you consider them tough outs if they did get in?
I just think head-to-head, Detroit's a better football team, but mm-hmm. I think the Ravens have the easier path in because of the AFC and, yeah. you know, and who they have left and things like that. So, yeah, we'll see. I'm kind of fascinated to see this game in sort of a weird way. But, yeah, I mean, the Ravens, I really like that defense. I just, you know, we haven't seen enough out of Joe Flacco and the rest of that. I mean, they, you know, they keep missing the outside targets on throws. And I don't know, the offensive line has taken a lot of hits this year, obviously. So
yep.
they're getting it done. I mean, give them credit, you know. But I guess I'd say Detroit's the better team, and yet Baltimore might have the easier path into the playoffs.
Curious to see how Matt Stafford comes back from he took a pounding once again on Thanksgiving, and then of course was hobbling after getting his ankle rolled up on, but said he's fine. Was observed without a limp this week. He's a warrior, man. But remember, it was the thumb last year that sort of that injury that preceded their slide. They lost five in a row
to end
the season, and I just the Lions' offensive line is suddenly a concern again. They can't run the football. They can't stop opposing running backs at all, so
yep.
Some issues you need to get solved. Obviously,
pretty
if they're going to be playing
though,
in January.
4-1.
Yep. That's a good point. And Caldwell more often than not has him ready. Although I was a little disturbed by the rough start on Thanksgiving. It looked like the Vikings were going to run away with that thing, and became an interesting game. At least it turned out to be the best game of Thanksgiving. So that's going to do it on the Pro Football Weekly podcast for this week. He is Eric. I am Arthur. We appreciate you guys so much. And one more reminder to head to iTunes and subscribe to the PFW podcast. Subscribe to all four of our podcasts while you're over there. Leave ratings and reviews. Those are always welcome. A big thank you to our sponsor, Loot Crate. The best surprise you know is coming. A huge thank you to our producer, Dan Mott. And the biggest thank you of all goes to you guys for being with us each and every week. We hope you enjoy Week 13 in the NFL. We hope you enjoyed the conference title games in college this weekend. And we'll be back to discuss it next week on the Pro Football Weekly podcast.
See you guys.